biggest bad boy of podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guest. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
Hey, welcome everyone to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm DJ Impact, and I got the bad boys here with me. I was going to say a couple, but we got the bad boys here with me. Sin City Steve.
Hey, y'all. How you doing tonight? Yeah. No. That wasn't good enough. I'm going to need you to do that one more time.
Sin City Steve, y'all. Yeah.
All right.
There you go. Steve. And, of course, Matt Michaels.
I'll give the advice again. Definitely swallow. Don't spit it.
Oh my God.
Whatever you like.
If you heard the last podcast, you would know where that reference came from. But that's how Matt is feeling right now. Anyway, everybody, welcome to another edition here. We have our special guest with us. He was in UFC, did his thing. Mr. Stephen Bonner, make some noise for him.
What's up, everyone? Thanks for coming out, especially my man Jevin over there and my friend Lori here. She's got a lot of supportive friends here. So
awesome.
Beautiful. Good to have the support of the MMA world turned wrestling fans. They turned them all wrestling fans. Never would have watched it without me. Mm-hmm. Right, Lori? Right. Yes, yes,
yes. Now, rumors are, though, according to your Wikipedia, that you're retired. I just don't believe it because you look like you're ready for the next fight already. So tell me it's not true, right?
You got to move on in life, really.
Something
what? Gets stale, and you got to do something else. And that's kind of what happened. I loved MMA, loved it. I'd watch it all day and night. I'll never get sick of this. I want to do this forever. And then you get old, you get hit in the head a lot, kicked in the nuts every week for 15 years. And you're like, yeah, it's getting old.
Yeah.
And then you start doing something like pro wrestling. And it's like, wow, just like I'm learning jiu-jitsu again. And all these new moves are cool and it's exciting. And I'm traveling, seeing the world. And this whole new world opened up.
Yeah.
When another one kind of closed. And I'm really feel like a kid again.
And 15 years from now, you're going to look back
exactly.
And go, I'm getting punched in the face and I'm getting kicked under nuts enough.
It's got to run its course and Someday I'll be sick of it. And then that new thing. And I already know what that is. It's stand-up comedy. So when my body fails me, roll me up on a stage and give me a microphone and let the show continue.
Nice.
All right.
Well, since you said it, what is your best one-liner joke?
All right.
The best. No, I'm into Zen. And what's it? The great way is not difficult for he who has no preferences. When love and hate are absent, everything is clear and understood. Make the slightest distinction and heaven and hell get set infinitely apart. What does that mean? It means why you got to... What do you like? What's better? Do you like, is she prettier than her? Do you like this ice cream over that? Like, man, no jokes are funny. That's a very long and elaborate way of kind of dodging, putting me on the spot and telling you a joke. Do you really want to hear one?
I think everyone does.
Yeah.
Okay. So this guy was going home from work, crossing over the tracks. He noticed a lady tied up on the tracks. Oh my goodness, you know. So he's like, my God, a train's coming too. He's going to get run over. I got to do something quick. So he runs out there, goes, and, you know, tight knots on there. He's freaking out, gets a knife out, cuts. Eventually saves her, right? Goes home. And They have sex all over the house. I mean, every room in the house.
Yeah.
And just like banging her belly, just head hitting the ceiling. She needs that one. And he's after that, all the sex, he's down at the bar telling the bartender about it. And, you know, he's like, wow, my goodness, that sounds like an exciting day. How did she look? And he's like, I don't know. She didn't have a head.
Oh, man.
Hey, that's the first time I told that joke since 2004. And you know who I told it to? Craig Poligian and the Ultimate Fighter tryouts when they flew us all out to Las Vegas. Dana didn't want anything to do with me. This came out later. No, neither did the Fertittas. But Craig picked me. Why did Craig pick me? He said, you told that joke, and then I knew you were crazy. So, boom.
Nice. Well, he's definitely got a career after professional wrestling.
By the way, Craig's the executive producer. Well, it probably didn't make sense to a lot of people. But the big boss, the guy in charge.
There you go.
What was that experience like having to go through? What was the process of making it onto that? Because, I mean, that's – you're doing something that wasn't established. It was new.
Yeah, it was pretty easy, believe it or not. I mean – I sent in a tape of my fights and then, you know, a little bit of me in front of the camera just telling who I was and what I did. And they had about, I think it was 40 or 60. They had a lot of us out there, out at the Palace Station. We were locked there for a week. And then we did the more rigorous testing where you do the, you know, the MRI in your brain and the background check and the blood work and the physical and the, and then from there they, and drug tests, of course, and they narrowed it down to the 16. Forrest actually, like, didn't get on the plane. This is going to come out. They made a show about this, but Dana had to call and beg him to get on because he, you know, he's leaving. He had a good job as a cop, and he was kind of like, it wasn't like, oh, the job will be waiting for you when you get back. It'll be like, you leave for a couple months, you won't have a job. So,
yeah. Wow.
Yeah, actually, we shot a documentary on this recently, so I don't think it's aired yet. But when it does, I'll send you the YouTube link.
Nice, man. Definitely. So,
because I don't have ESPN.
Now, obviously, working on that show, did you have any stories from your time there or experiences that didn't make the air, things that were left on the cutting room floor, other than what you just shared with us right then?
Are you kidding me? Of course. Yeah, I know. Here's a dandy. Okay. So, a staph infection broke out in the house.
Oh, Jesus.
In impetigo. It was probably due to the house couldn't handle the turds of 16 guys. So the showers just overflowed with poop. You know,
yeah.
And the floors might have got, and you know, the camera guys walking around the mats. One thing led to another. I got my chest waxed, thinking it would look cool, and it kind of rips your skin off. So grappling around in the mats, and you have fucking.
Oh, you can, you know, that's all right.
That's appropriate.
Anyways, a couple of us got staph. I had the worst case, impetigo. So. Wow. They end up quarantining me way at the Hacienda Hotel by the Hoover Dam.
Why they had me so far away, I have no idea.
Dana said I wanted to get you as far away from the strip as possible so you couldn't get any trouble. So we go there, and then the first night we're there, first day we're there, Sam Hoger's got staff too, and we're all at the restaurant downstairs. We're not allowed to leave or anything. And Sam is, wow, like, talk about... someone who puts his foot in his mouth, like good cop, bad cop. Like he was hitting on this waitress so bad that like I didn't even open my mouth and like she was all over me because she was so repulsive. So anyways, but I'm locked in my room so we can't really do anything. And the guy watching me was the Leave It to Beavers kid. And anyways, he's watching me and I'm like, finally I go knock on his door and I'm like, come on. you know, let me at least go down with you. What are you doing, gambling? Okay, let's go hang out. Yeah, all right. So he let me hang out with them. We go down there. And he's like, you know what? They take all our phone and wallet and anything, so we're not allowed to have money. He feels bad for me after a while. He gives me like $20 to gamble with. Before you know it, I'm up like $700, like, right? And we're like, shit, let's go. Let's go to the strip clubs. I can't bring this money back to the house with me.
Right. Yeah.
So we must have hit like every strip club in Vegas. And just had a great old time. And so much so, like, we were all out of money. All right, what was this? Why'd we have to do it? But at the end of the night, we had to go by Albertsons, and he had to go, and we had to go through the garbages and find receipts for stuff he could say he had to buy for me to get reimbursed for the money he spent at the strip club.
Oh, man.
Right? And my final memory of the evening was driving his car back to the Hacienda Hotel with him hanging out the passenger's window vomiting.
Oh.
We get back. Next day, we get the call. We need you back at the gym immediately, you know. And keep in mind, this was the last night. I had been gone for a couple days. And we were grossly overtrained. Like, Randy Couture had us so overtrained. Like, I was so weak. I could barely walk. I was so sore. But after a couple days off, my body recovered, despite that last night of partying.
Right.
So I went back, and right when I went back, everyone's like, oh, my God, Stephen, like, you won't believe what happened. Like, it's the night that all the drama broke out with Lieben, Koscheck, and Bobby, and he smashed the house up, and I was nowhere to be found that episode. Why? So it's at the Hacienda.
Oh.
And I had to say, oh, my God, you know, like, you guys all got to go out and have fun. Oh, it sucks. I didn't get to.
Yeah.
No. But then it was like, oh, my God, you have to fight Bobby now. You have to fight Bobby. You got to break him and Koscheck up, you know, because – and I was like, man, I didn't have anything to do with it. But, okay.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Oh. Yes, strip club with the staph infection. Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Good one, Lori.
The question is, though –
I had clothes on.
The question is, though – were you more contagious or were they more contagious? Yeah.
Yeah. In all fairness, I got a couple big antibiotic shots, and it was like the third day after I'd been on them, so clothes on.
Do you think
you made me feel bad? Thanks, Lori. The poor stripper staff.
So do you think that reality competitions are more so produced than actual, you know, let life happen and see what happens?
Most of them, yeah, to an extent, but no, not ones where you actually have to go in and beat the guy up, you know, or fight
right.
the guy, or have the, I mean, that's the thing, is they could try to steer it so... I mean, they could always paint someone to be a good guy and someone to be a bad guy. They have 24/7 of footage, and all they got to do is catch you. Like, yeah, you know that. Like, on the show, all the good stuff you do and all the great, like, noble behaviors, and none of that stuff's making it, but all the bad stuff will. So, understanding that helps. But ultimately, in that show, you got to fight. So, mm-hmm. you know... All bullshit aside, the most challenging part about it, though, psychologically, a lot of guys break down psychologically and don't perform well because of that, whereas in their normal violent environment, they probably would. I've seen that a lot on that show.
So
that's the hardest part.
One of our listeners, the Stormin' Mormon, demanded that I ask you this question. Is Josh Koscheck that much of a dick in real life, or was he just cut that way in the show?
Well, he's like, besides Loden, who just died right afterwards, the only one who didn't show up at the reunion dinner. It's like, he hates everyone. I mean, he's a guy that really doesn't like people overall, you know? It's not like,
fair enough.
Really, oh, what a nice guy. Put it this way, him and Baroni get along, right? Yeah.
What would you say was the, for you, the pinnacle of your MMA career?
I mean, everyone knows that. The Forrest fight. Can't really top that one. All the stars and heavens were aligned. Dana White, who doesn't believe in God, actually was quoted saying that. Yeah. All the stars and the heavens line up for us that night. By the way, no one could thank God after their fight because that's a bunch of crap.
What goes into your preparation in MMA as compared to going into your preparation that you're now learning in terms of pro wrestling?
Pro wrestling is something you really like. You could practice so much in the gym, but there's nothing like a crowd. And that's where you really figure it out. Like, you know, you could have good technique and know how to do moves, but to really know how to tell that story and read the crowd is the art of pro wrestling. That's something that comes with repetitions. So it's definitely something I was completely oblivious to early in my career. But it's just like, you know, you could train a dog to do a trick. So you could take me, even my first match, my second match, it was like a long match against Mike Speedball Bailey up in Montreal. And it was a good match. And the only reason I could handle that match that long is because he meticulously walked it with me like 1,100 times at least, you know? So, like, you could take someone who's a totally green wrestler and throw him in WrestleMania just because you could have practice every portion of that, like a play, a million times.
Yeah.
But to really learn the art of indie wrestling, that's not what it is. It's meeting, like, an hour before the show starts and talking backstage with the guy, and that's it. I mean, that's your preparation. So, mm-hmm. You know, this last match went pretty well because he got there early, and we were able to talk for a while. Other matches of mine haven't went well where, like, the guy was late, or the guy said, hey, we walked it once or twice, and that's enough. Don't worry about it. But, I mean, I think the real art of pro wrestling is where you can't rehearse it a million times, and you could kind of get in there on the fly after just, you know. I mean, I hear old stories of, like, Eddie Guerrero and that, how he'd scare guys by – like purposely being late, not letting them call or walk the match, so you had to do it in the ring, and it would like drive guys nuts. So that's pro wrestling,
definitely, man. And so in MMA, you used to say that once you started bleeding, that's when the American Psycho came out in the fight. Is it the same in the squared circle?
I mean, I'm not a big fan of like the. Me personally, if guys want to do that to themselves, I will watch it and be entertained. But I have no desire to mutilate myself. Like, I've had more stitches than Frankenstein. It's going to happen out there organically. And our, you know, it really will. It's and, like, so I'm not... No, I'm not, like, all about the blood, to be honest with you. I mean, I had to be all about it and fighting because I had no choice.
Right.
I hated getting stitched, man. I'm sick of it. No, I'm not going to be cutting myself a lot.
Yeah.
What is it for someone who's never had that happen, who never had to have stitches in their life, can you describe what it's like sitting there after a match, all the adrenaline is, you know, kind of coming down, and you have to sit there and the doctor has to, you know, stitch up a part of your body. What is going through your head, man?
I mean, just no big deal. No big deal. Had hundreds of times before. But it gets old after a while. And one good one, UFC 116, my second fight with Kristoff. Great fight. Took him out in the second round. But I had 7 cuts on my head and face that required stitches. And
wow.
The next fight was Leben's. And they're trying to Leben and Akiyama. And it was a great fight. It was... Dana gave 2 fight of the nights that night. One to me, one to Leben, because they were both awesome fights. And he's trying to stitch like the inside of my mouth, and I need to sit there like, and lay my head still, but I hear the crowd going nuts, and I keep lifting my head up, and, you know, the doctor is getting frustrated with me, and I'm just like, you're going to have to wait. I'm not missing this. You know? I'm not missing this fucking fight.
That's awesome, man. And so you actually trained Dave Bautista for his only pro MMA fight in 2012. What was that experience like?
I got to hand it to him, man. He was 43 at the time, and he busted his ass and, like, did it. Like, man, he worked. He worked. He did it. He did it. Like, really proud of him for that. He sucked it up. I thought he'd be, you know, thrown in the towel more than that, because I pushed him. I pushed him, and I beat him up and got him in shape and got him ready. And in the fight, too, he was stiff at the beginning, got hit with some punches, level change, took the guy down. Side heavy side mount, that's what we worked on a ton. And then when the guy gave up his back, he sprawled him out and finished him. So executed perfectly. I was really proud of him.
Do you have any contact with Dave still? And would someone like Dave be able to do the same for you in terms of maybe giving you pointers and training you a little bit to further your wrestling career?
Well, yeah, I talked with him here and there. I was at his wedding a couple years ago. And I do get pointers from him. But would I be able to pay him what he paid me to come here for a couple weeks? I don't know. Dave, put that movie on halt. I got a big match coming up.
Right.
Can't pay you that much, though.
What would you say when you were a kid was your absolute favorite thing about growing up in Munster, Indiana?
My favorite thing.
And what's the population?
Probably like under 50,000, so not too small. Yeah. Maybe like 30. I don't know. I actually would always long and daydream that I was in California or somewhere awesome, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, instead of at school, you're looking out the window at snow and the corn. Like, yeah, I imagine the ocean and the waves and, you know, girls in bikinis and
there you
that
go.
Sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they said I had ADD.
And so, obviously, did you grow up a pro wrestling fan at all?
Yes, yes.
Awesome.
This was, I couldn't have been but 10 years old. We were at a church, and we had to go around and said what we wanted to be when we grew up. And I said a professional wrestler. And the teacher said that I was unacceptable, that I had to pick a real job.
Wow.
And I don't know what I said, maybe a dentist or something like that. But anyways, then we were playing Mercy with the other kid. The kid was bigger, stronger than me, and he was beating me. But there's no way I was going to say Mercy. So I kneed him in the balls.
Oh,
hard. And he went down, and like, so it was such a big deal. He's crying and rolling around, and I was just, I got in a lot of trouble for that.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I read that story about you saying that you wanted to be a professional wrestler. And growing up in Chicago, in the eighth grade, when we were graduating, they made you do this thing where you stood in front of all the families watching and you said what you're going to be. So I started with, and we had to run it past the teacher at first, of course, and I said, I want to be a drug addict.
Huh. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, well, see? And that was the thing. And it was like, and they're like, no, you cannot say that. I'm like, fine, I want to be a janitor. No, that's not acceptable. So I said, all right, I want to be a pro wrestler. Okay, well, you can say that.
I guess I should have started off a little lower.
Right. Yeah, you set the bar low. But, you know, that's remarkable in terms of you, you know, being at a young age, being able to say something like that. Who was the wrestler that you liked the most at that age?
I'll just go through kind of the ones that influenced me a lot. Like Ricky Steamboat, I met him and shook his hand. Fucking loved him. The Macho Man flying off the top rope. I always knew I'd be doing that someday. Like the Hogan, the way he flexed in the ring after a win. Boom. Like, yes. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew that I'd do that in the UFC someday. And then, like, Ultimate Warrior press slamming guys. It was just really impressive, you know? And then when I rared occasions, I'd see the Road Warriors go out there. You just knew that those guys would really kick the shit out of any of those other tag teams they were in there with. In the late 90s, around 2000, my dad started watching, got me back in a little. That's when Stone Cold was really over. But then Brian Pillman, his loose gimmick in terms of like cutting promos and really looking crazy. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was a big fan of that as well. Those were the main ones.
That's awesome.
What was it like to now being able to meet someone like Animal? And, you know, here as a kid, you know, you liked and anticipated these guys. And now here he is. You're meeting him backstage. And you get to work on par with him.
Yeah, no surprise, though. Like, I had, you know, when in 07, Keanu Reeves tapped me on the shoulder and say his sister wanted a picture with me. And who Robert Downey Jr. said he was a big fan of mine. And, like, so weird stuff like that's happened over the years, especially being in the UFC. But it was just good knowing him on a different level, you know, than the scary guy, and just know him on a human level and like laughing and shooting the shit with him like a regular guy. That was really good. And one more thing is when Kurt Angle and Brock would beat the crap out of each other, I really enjoyed mm-hmm. the violence. You could tell, like, oh man, like this, they were rough, strong. Strong, rough style.
Yeah. If you had the chance to face one of those guys in a wrestling match, who would it be? And in a shoot match, who would it be?
In a wrestling match, Brock, because probably couldn't beat him in a shoot match. And then a shoot match, Kurt, because they beat him easily.
That's awesome. So, Stefan, obviously your MMA pedigree is well known, UFC Hall of Famer, and now you've started your transition and you're knee deep into Impact Wrestling, and with several other companies as well. Who in the MMA world do you feel could make a successful transition into the wrestling world?
I guess pretty much anyone who really put their heart and soul into it, like Matt Riddle did, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even the UFC, like, Riddle wasn't much of a promo guy, so I thought he had a good look. But at first, pro wrestling, I was like, oh, well, not a good talker, but wow, did he really, like, set the bar for the other MMA guys, man? Like, he was, even before he got signed, when I was first started, I was really, like, watching, looking up to him as someone who learned the art quickly and dedicated himself to it.
Awesome, man. And now let's flip the script on that. Who from the pro wrestling world do you think could transition to MMA?
Well, if he could make 265 Braun Strowman.
Oh, man.
That would be a sight.
But
yeah, would be a sight.
How much does he weigh?
Oh, God, he's got to be 3-something.
Yeah, so it'll have to be like a super heavyweight fight somewhere else. Or yeah, just open weight fight. Him and Brock. Come on.
Yeah, there you go.
I think that there is money mm-hmm. in that, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'd buy it.
Hell yeah.
Is there anyone that you haven't fought MMA with that you would ever be interested in fighting?
No. Yeah. I might as well just say it. Before the Tito fight, something showed up on my MRI that you're fine, go good. And then it was actually afterwards that I was looking through it, and it was an abnormality. Jesus. Cavum septum pellucidum. And it wasn't on the previous MRI 10 years ago.
Oh,
and it's
man.
Linked with pugilistic dementia and CTE. But apparently, since it is normal in like a small, small, tiny bit of the population, like people with Down syndrome, that it was like it wasn't like something that you're not allowed to fight over. But like, yeah, it was just no one even cared. But I don't need to be getting hit in the head anymore. I mean, it took me a long while after retiring to where I could just sleep for more than an hour.
Yeah.
And after a year of that, you know, it's hard to deal with. So, mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you're doing particularly to protect yourself in the wrestling ring from any kind of head trauma?
Yeah, I mean, it's... That's pro wrestling, is to create the illusion like you're hitting each other. But then you watch Japanese, and some of these guys really are concussing themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
And then right. that starts happening, then I'll do it right back, and then the match will be over. So.
Right.
But, yeah, chair shots, where do you want it? Over my back, you know? Yeah. Like, yeah. And then, too, if a guy stiffs me, yeah, I'm going to let him know. But, no need for any more of that. And already, like, in the NFL, if you know anything about that, those guys are like walking time bombs. It's like right. 10 years after they retire is really where it takes its toll. And,
yeah,
and
right.
You see it. So I'm not even there. I'm not even halfway there yet. So, yeah, like, even if I don't come out of retirement and fight, like, who knows, I'll be in a few more years. I've noticed the difference. And it took me a while. And I think CBD has really helped. My buddy, Kenny, Healing Panda, has been... Getty and me on CBDs now for a while, and I could tell the difference, man. I mean, just sleeping is one thing, and it got me off. I was on, you know, for the not being able to sleep. They put me on Valium and Valium and Ambien, which is the terrible drugs.
Yeah,
so I'm not on those anymore. Take his stuff. He's got a nighttime formula like that. And I'm on one non-narcotic sleep med. So not bad from what I was on.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
And then drinking a lot, and I don't drink anymore. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. All right.
As he says that, in a bar.
Yeah, but yeah. It's going to be around, you know? Yeah. He's got to be around it. It's part of life.
Yeah.
Thanks. Can't push it away.
So... In your brief career in pro wrestling, is there so far a match that stuck out to you that you feel that was firing on all cylinders?
Yeah, honestly, I felt like that second match ever with Speedball Bailey in Montreal at IWS is like that. And then this last match with Logan. I always want to call him Logan Clark. Logan.
Well, shout out to Logan in Indiana.
Ah, man.
As he's got to look up the name.
My brain.
That's all right.
It's all good, man.
Yeah.
So... now, there seems to be a blurring of the lines between MMA and pro wrestling, especially in recent years. From a consumer fan point of view, there's definitely a market for hybrid presentations, similar to the Natural Born Killers, which you were part of, and blood sport shows have proven. Do you see a full-time promotion sprouting up to run these kind of hybrid shows in the future?
I think Japan's the best place. I mean, if anywhere could really pull it off, I think it's where Pancrase came out. I think, you know, bring back Pancrase. And that's what, to me, that's where the magic lies. And they're coming back. I know their economy was weak for a while, and it seems like the New Japan is getting strong again. And
definitely.
It's just a perfect place to bring back some sort of pro wrestling and even throw the Pancrase name on it.
Yeah.
If they could.
Do you think that anything like that could fly here in the States?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it could. But overall, I think the pro wrestling fans here aren't as big into the shoot style. Well, the hardcore wrestling fans, I think... I you know, it's weird. I get mixed things. The Paradigm Pro Wrestling I did just this last weekend in Jeffersonville, Indiana, was the shoot style that were the UGWI rules. And I got a lot of mix from the fans there. I had to say, how do you like this? And, yeah, it wasn't I've been asking a lot of wrestling fans, and it's mixed. It's mixed, to be honest with you. I thought they'd be a little more into it, considering how well things like the Bloodsport and Natural Born Killers have done. Yeah. It's like I think it's one of those things that people are really critical of it, but they're going to watch it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can't stand this. And they're going to go buy it and watch it and shit all over it.
Yeah.
Has New Japan ever come up for you in terms of them having any interest or you having any interest in working with them?
No, I haven't heard from New Japan as of yet, but I just had a pretty good match. So,
what's it like for those who don't know, what's it like in terms of trying to get yourself booked out there on the independent scene?
Yeah, it's one of those things where you just got, which I'm not that good of, you know, you got to self-promote a lot and hit people up and go on your social media and make comments. And that's, I'm the world-class heavyweight champ right now, took that title from MVP, and that guy found me because I commented on a post. He was like, I knew who you are. I loved watching you fight. I had no idea you were pro wrestling. So it's on you, and I'm not the biggest self-promoter like that. So just reaching out to people, and I really want to and will do more of that. And that's how you get gigs. But also by having good matches that you could back it up, you know?
Yeah.
So just being really active, and you got to go for it, you know? And it's hard. These guys at the lower level without a name, man, it's hard for me. It's like I got to reach out and do this, and I got a name, but... Imagine these guys without a name, and no wonder they hate me.
Yeah.
But anyways, Logan James, giving him a shout out. That was a hell of a match, man. You really made me look good, so thank you. And sorry for dropping you.
Going to MVP, what was it like for you to actually, at this in your career, which is, you know, still fairly early, to get a title? What kind of, you know, what does that show you in terms of where you can go?
Yeah, I feel like it's really not, you know, he fought in the UFC and sold out arenas that, like, I'm not too surprised. Like, I could go around and win pro wrestling titles and have good matches on the indie circuit, despite, you know, my age and experience level. I'm pretty confident in that. So it was cool, though, that MVP, you know, put me over like that, especially being this green. And which, too, I was injured. I had a torn pec, so
yeah.
I couldn't do much. And it worked, though. We pulled it off to where it was a quick match where he got a couple pin attempts on me that I kicked out and said, like, okay, we'll make this fair. I'm not allowed to strike. Well, before the match, I'm not allowed to strike. You know, we'll just do wrestling only, just submission, just wrestling. And then, of course, heel, I cheat, and the ref's not looking, strike him and choke him. But it worked, considering I couldn't do too much with my injury.
Is that one of the best allures of wrestling for you? Is the actual storytelling and being able to work with someone to entertain people.
Yeah, that's what you're out there doing, telling a story. And that's another thing you just remind me of from that last story, is that if you do have an injury, you're collaborating with your opponent, you know? You're not fighting with them on everything. So you could say, hey, man, this is hurt. Like, let's work around it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's really, I was worried at first. Oh, my God. How am I going to wrestle? I have this bad injury. But, like, that's the beauty of pro wrestling, that you could. I thought, too, we'll have to injure it in the ring, and then I'll play around and, you know, like, oh, my. And have to show, but no, like the fans didn't even know I was injured. That's and that's something too. I was like, that really blew my mind. I go, for sure, we're gonna have to, you know, hurt it in the match and then act injured, but no, we just worked around it. It was really amazing.
Yeah. What's Dana White like as a boss? And do you think that Dana has what would be comparative if you were signed by WWE, do you think you could work for a Vince McMahon because you worked for Dana White?
Oh, no way. I get fired so fast. Yeah. I mean, come on. If I could... Like, I came from the UFC. I had it made. I had guaranteed tenure for life and got canned. So there's no way I'd last in the WWE. Sorry.
That's awesome, man. And so, Stefan, what we're going to do next is we've got a segment on the show where I'm just going to throw out some names for you. We're going to do some quick word association. You don't have to confine it to just one word, but when I say the name, just tell me the first thing that pops into your head.
Okay.
All right, man, we're going to do this for 70 seconds. Are you ready?
70, wow.
Yeah. All right, let's get it going.
Sin City Steve, 70 deadly seconds starts now.
Forrest Griffin.
Ass.
Anderson Silva.
Titties.
Tito Ortiz.
Turd.
John Jones.
The GOAT.
Yeah. Rashad Evans.
Sweet.
Matt Riddle.
Spicoli.
Filthy Tom Lawler.
Fungicide.
Minoru Suzuki.
Automobile.
Brock Lesnar.
Paul Heyman.
Moose.
Deer.
MVP.
Loser.
CM Punk.
Winner.
And last but not least, Dana White. You can say it.
Satan.
He said it.
He said it.
Well, that being said, we'll open up the mic. Any audience members have any questions, please come on up and let's ask any questions. Come on.
We got a microphone right here hot and ready for you.
Come on.
Don't be afraid.
Don't make us take the microphone. We got enough wire to, you know, walk the microphone to people.
Oh, all right.
In your independent career, who are you looking forward to most locking up with, and why?
I'd have to say Filthy Tom Lawler.
Yeah.
Because I competed with him in a physique contest, and
I still have his pants.
And after winning, he stink-palmed me pretty good in the locker room, wiped his ass with his hand, then congratulated me. So he got me good, and I owe him one.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
All right, anyone else?
Don't be shy.
Come on, y'all.
Yeah, otherwise you're making us do all the work.
Yeah.
All right. Come on. Marcus.
All right. What year did the Ultimate Fighter that you were on air? I just couldn't figure out what sophomore year of college that was.
05.
05, right.
Well, actually fall of 04, and then me and Forrest fought in April of 05.
All right, that was my second sophomore year of college. Okay. All right, I've been trying to figure it. Now I got my timeline set. So who are you going to fight on Friday the 13th?
MVP.
Yeah, right, all right.
So that was in the head. I was doing opposites. So what's opposite of the most valuable player? The least valuable, the loser. And then what's the opposite of CM Punk? Because I think of him getting his ass kicked in the octagon, a winner.
That makes sense to me.
Anyways.
Yeah.
That's where my head went.
All right, who's next? Any other questions?
Anyone else?
Lori. Come on, Lori.
Just ask him an AEW question or something. Yeah. There you go.
I always think of the root beer when I hear it.
Okay, AEW.
Oh, good.
If you could choose any opponent from AEW to go against, who would you go against?
Who's that guy? Kenny Omega. Yes! He really makes people look good.
Woo! Yeah.
So I think he could take me and really make me look good because he does that with everyone.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you watch a lot of AEW?
No, but I'm a fan of his.
Okay.
And I just noticed that it seems like he's got that Ric Flair type of quality in him.
Sure.
Then that's what Flair did best.
Yeah. Anyone else? Okay. I think everybody's good.
Jevin, you got one? Come on.
I
have
two.
Come on, man. Anything.
Anything. Oh, here we go.
In your independent wrestling, who was your toughest opponent?
Probably Speedball Bailey, just because it was only my second match. And it was a long match, like the longest one I've had to date. I think it was like over 15 minutes. And I didn't want it to be that long, but he like really cracked the whip and he made me do moves that I'd never done before, including catching someone. But it was a backflip off the top ring post, and I really had time, you know? And it wasn't right before I got speared twice, and it kind of threw me off. But he... Yeah, he kind of elevated my game, and that's what I mean by toughest. He was tough on me. He wouldn't let me, okay, yeah, we'll just have an easy eye. He's like, no, you can do this. And like, what do you mean we're going to keep going? Like, that's too much. I'm never going to remember this. No, and trust me. And so, yeah, he really cracked the whip on me, and it was a good match for being my second match.
Do you think, I mean, you said a key word, and I think that this would probably be something that's universal. Do you think in pro wrestling, the key is the trust factor?
Big part of it, yeah. Yep. And everyone, what's harder, MMA? It's different. In MMA, you don't have to trust anyone. You don't.
Mm-hmm.
You're better off not. But you have no choice in the pro wrestling. You got to lay your trust in people. So when you're working with idiots, man, that's, you know, it's, yeah. Yeah, it's no wonder people get... So injured, dude. It's really dangerous. Yeah. I just made a big mistake, you know, like on that Logan and against the move. That's another thing. You get in there and the guy wants to do something and you don't necessarily know how to take it, then like you got to figure it out. And if a guy really wants to do it, you got to step up, you know. As long as it's not putting you, like, okay, you got to let me hit you with a barbed wire bat, you know, as long as it's not putting yourself in danger. Right. But that's hard. Yeah, you got to trust people. And you have a huge advantage when you work for the bigger shows where you got someone else looking out for you and overseeing it and making sure, you know, and they really care about. We can't that you don't get injured. With the other shows, you don't. You actually put yourself at a lot more risk because you're willing to do anything kind of to get on and get noticed. So you're really going to go and do dangerous stuff. And a big part of the reason we see a lot of them injuries in the indie wrestling because there is no one to say, no, you're not doing that. It's like, hey, guys, go ahead and give me a good match. Do whatever you want. And that's usually how it is.
Yeah.
Any other audience questions? So Sin City doesn't have to stand there with his mic in his hand.
I kind of like him doing this. Nice. What are your thoughts on Goldberg? Not answering any?
What's going on with Goldberg lately?
Well, him and your boy Riddle.
Are they? I don't know. I don't.
That might have been like 30 minutes ago, but
it just happened.
They were beefing. No, they were beefing. What? How long ago?
Oh,
was
for
that?
Real?
Yeah, it looks like they might be setting up a WrestleMania match.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, that's awesome. That'd be a great guy to, like, really, if they want to put Riddle over, oh, my God, I'm putting me.
Yeah.
And, it looks like they probably want to do that. I think it's great.
All right, so we'll close the audience mic. One of the final questions I have for you is if you had to do this at a younger age, in terms of starting pro wrestling at a younger age instead of MMA, what advice could you give now looking back at your younger self that would help you progress? Because a lot of people start when they're 18, 19, 20 years old, and they don't have the perspective of being, you know, in their 40s and having life experience.
Yeah, honestly, nothing, because I'd be dead. If I started doing this when I was in my 20s, I'd have killed myself. Mm. For sure. Backflip off the top. I'm a shooting star like Brock, only my neck wouldn't be able to handle it. Honest to God truth, that's how I feel.
And in your training, who can you give the credit to the different trainers you had in getting yourself into pro wrestling?
Let's see. At first, I just go to the FSW gym, and the students would teach me. And then, just lately, Kyle Hawk and Greg Romero helped me a couple times. But my two main coaches there were at first Disco Inferno and then Sin Bodhi. I probably worked with those guys the most. And volume-wise, not even that much. Maybe, 10 sessions with each of them. And everything else has been experience, real-life experience. And I'm getting there. I'm finally, I think I'm over 20 matches now.
You think we can see possibly an Impact, you and Disco going at it? I think that would be a good matchup.
Me and Disco going at it. I mean, if he thinks he could have a good match with me, I'm game for that. And he doesn't wrestle too much anymore. He just comes in there, does his lava lounge, and gets his ass kicked for the most part. Yeah. But what's that?
With or without the turkey suit?
What else? Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, come by my gym, 4510 West Hacienda, whole family fitness, martial arts, and hey, maybe even pro wrestling.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Maybe. So we got a cage in there now, but we're getting rid of it. And might throw a ring in there. And if we do,
it's all.
Yeah, then I'm really going to be getting effing good. Talk about the fast track.
That's awesome. Stefan, man, thanks for hanging out with us tonight.
Thank you. Oh, thanks everyone for coming. Lori and the gang, Jevin. Forget your name. Mark.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mark.
And if fans want to get a hold of you on social media, how can they do that?
Everything, my name's Stefan Bonnar, STEPHANBONNAR. Yeah, the name's the Jim Silverwolf, 4510 West Hacienda. Yeah, hit me up for gigs. Or I'm taking bookings now for next year. This year's pretty full, which is not too long. Just one more month. One more month. But, yeah, pro wrestling is freaking awesome. I'm enjoying it. When do I get my blue belt, Disco Sin? When do I get my blue belt?
Awesome.
Awesome. We appreciate it. Thank you for coming out. Thank all of you guys for coming out, too.
Yes, we do thank all of you. We thank Boulder Station as well for having us here at the Kicks Lounge. Keep listening. You never know who we're going to have next.
And speaking of, really quick, just to give everyone an update, Damian Drake is basically, he can't move his head very much. He has limited head-turning ability. His shoulder's movable a little bit today, so he's coming back from this injury very slowly, but is not doing too good. So just keep him in your thoughts, and hopefully, you know, again, it's a dangerous, dangerous thing to do, pro wrestling.
That's right. All right. With that, you all have a good night. And thanks again. Until next time.